From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is Politically Georgia. I'm Patricia Murphy. While we're looking ahead to a long, tense day under the Gold Dome as lawmakers wrestle with which bills to pass or defeat on this final day of the legislative session. Strict measures on how law enforcement deals with undocumented immigrants, changes to election law, and a bill crammed with culture war issues are all awaiting action.
I'm Bill Nygut. We'll talk with legislators from both sides of the aisle as they steel themselves for this 40th day of the session. Senate Majority Leader Steve Gooch and Senate Minority Leader Gloria Butler.
And we'll have a live report from Greg Bluestein, who's already in place at the Capitol. Plus, Attorney John Eastman, a defendant in the Fulton County election conspiracy case, is on the verge of losing his law license. Eastman helped plot Donald Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia and other swing states. He's one of a number of lawyers facing ethics complaints for their actions on behalf of Trump in 2020. We invite you to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode of Politically Georgia.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents...
Hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny...
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
Well, Bill Nygut, here we are again. We've been waiting. I feel like we've been waiting for this day 40 for about 80 days.
Well, you especially, because you've spent an awful lot of time down walking the halls of the Capitol to get stories.
It's true. It's true. And it's also the end of a two-year legislative session. Yeah. So this all started this time last year, and anything that didn't get across the finish line at the end of 2023 was a holdover to this session. A few new items popped up that we're going to talk about, but now tonight at midnight really is do or die.
Yeah, biennials coincide with the election of a new legislature. So yes, they operate in two-year cycles, and it's going to be interesting to see what gets across the finish line tonight. Are you going to be down there for the whole shebang?
I will be down there until the bitter end.
You know what, Patricia? You love the halls of government. That doesn't mean you like
what's wrong
all
with
of the
me?
Political people that you deal with. And you can be quite critical of some of them, but I've known for a long time you like government and being in those legislative bodies.
Well, I have a lot of respect for those institutions and the men and women who spend some of the best years of their lives literally down there trying to get it all to work on behalf of Georgians. So thank you, Bill. I'm glad you noticed. I'm glad you noticed. Well, as we said, it's the last day of the two-year legislative session in the Georgia General Assembly, and hundreds of bills are on lawmakers' desks as their sponsors are calling for immediate action. Last-minute deals are made, unexpected language suddenly appears in bills, and it changes the original intent. Some lawmakers plead to have their bills brought to the floor. Others work to block measures that they oppose. In other words, it's when chaos reigns. To help us bring some clarity to what to expect today, we're going to talk to two lawmakers, each from one side of the aisle, and we're going to start with the Senate's Republican Majority Leader, Steve Gooch from Dahlonega. Thanks so much for being with us, Senator.
Morning. How are you all?
I'm good. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know it's going to be a really, really busy one. So bring us up to speed, Senator, on what you are expecting. I know it's going to be a lot, but what are you keeping your eyes on in particular? What are you waiting for as Majority Leader?
Well, you know, as Majority Leader, I don't carry a lot of legislation, and that's intentional, so I don't have to worry about my own bills. I have a couple small little things that I'm pushing today to try to get to a final closeout, but my job is to help put together the caucus priorities for the year that started 2 years ago. So last November of 22, after our election, the caucus met and we started to build our agenda for the 2 year biennial. And so we're still working on some of the issues from a year and a half, 2 years ago. And some of those issues will be on the floor today in the House and the Senate. But there are a lot of bills, as you've already mentioned, that have not made final passage yet to the governor's desk. And I'll give you some examples. 36 of our Senate bills that we passed before crossover still haven't made it to the floor of the House for a vote. So as of this morning at 9 a.m., the House had 36 Senate bills that they had not chosen yet to put on the floor that came out of their committees. Over in the Senate side, we have 53 House bills that were tabled 2 days ago because we had already picked them for the floor for the final day 39 and 40. And so we have 53 House bills in the same posture. On top of that, we have 40 Senate bills that have gone across that have come back either for an agree or a disagree because the House may have changed those bills. They may have stuck an amendment on those. And then we have to decide, do we like the amendment? Do we not like the amendment? Do we want to amend it again and then send it back to the House? So it's like a game of volleyball. The ball's going back and forth. So there's 40 bills from the Senate that are in that posture and an additional 40 House bills that have gone back to them, they can also send back to us. So there's about 120 to 130 pieces of legislation just in the Senate's possession alone that have action to be taken today, or else the bills fail and they will no longer be considered until next year. You can reintroduce that bill, whoever's in the House and the Senate next year. But as of midnight tonight, when we sign and die, those bills, if they haven't had final passage, then they are dead for the entire process.
Okay.
So there's a lot of work to do. Many, many issues. And everybody has a different priority down here, as you know. And the people out in the hall, they have a particular interest because they're representing a strong industry of their own, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Those people out in the hall are the lobbyists. And boy, do they keep long hours. I mean, they are there pressing the flesh. I mean, they're down there right now. I already know that. They'll be there well past midnight. Well, Senator Gooch, the biggest ticket item, definitely, that you'll still have to wrap up and get past today is the state budget. $36 billion for our audience. That's super important, especially because of those pay raises for teachers. It's been many years in a row that y'all have managed to do pay raises for teachers and state employees. There's new mental health funding. There's new funding for a number of priorities. There were some differences, though, between the House and the Senate. Have y'all resolved those differences? Is that ready to come up for a vote today?
Yes, ma'am. Good question. So the conference committee was appointed 2 days ago, and typically in the Senate, that is the conference committee is obviously the appropriations chairman, Blake Tillery, and then whoever the president pro tem is and whoever the majority leader is, those three positions are typically on the conference committee for the budget because we represent the entire interests of the Senate chamber. That's a little bit different than other conference committees. Other conference committees are usually appointed by the lieutenant governor, and most of the time it's based on the subject of the bill. So it may be a doctor's issue that may be put, you know, one of our doctors may be put on the conference committee, depending on what the topic of that bill is. But in the Senate, we have been meeting. We've met with our conference committee, you know, officially yesterday morning at 10 o'clock, I think it was. And then we've met some more throughout the day yesterday, and some final meetings are being held this morning. We hope before too late in the afternoon, a decision will be made on a few small disagreements, literally just trying to balance that budget. As you know, the Constitution requires us to have a balanced budget every year. Unlike Washington, D.C., our budgets have to balance, and we have a real strong budget this year that's going to do a lot of good things for the hardworking Georgians out there. And the governor can't say enough about his leadership. He's been strong in our budget in the last 8 years and 6 years that he's been our governor. We've had some surpluses that have really climbed to high levels we've never seen before. So we've ratcheted down some of that surplus. We've invested $1.5 billion extra this year in transportation alone, and we've given that money back to the taxpayers as well by rolling back the income tax at an accelerated rate. So we're happy about where we are with the budget, and I think before the end of the day, most people in Georgia will be as well.
Senator, it's Bill Nygut. I have to say, we see each other on Zoom. It helps us communicate on the radio show. And I must say, for a guy who's facing a very, very long day, you look very cool, calm, and collected this morning. I hope you can maintain that posture well this into is, the late hours tonight.
This may be my poker face, and that's not any kind of indication of any gambling bills today. But that's a possibility as well.
All right. So here's what I want to ask you about. It's because a story has developed around freshman House member Omari Crawford, who introduced a bill that he believed great deal in because he said it would help crack down on teen suicides, in his case, talking about athletes. And, you know, when crossover day approaches, we always say this is the final day. A bill can go from one house to the other. But, of course, there are always ways to add elements that will get to move forward. And that's what you all in the Senate have done to Omari Crawford's bill on teen suicides. You've loaded it up with all of these, what we've been calling, and I think fairly, culture war issues. Things like sex education being prohibited before sixth grade. Restrictions on transgender students in which restroom they're allowed to use, where they can play sports. There's some language, I think, that deals with librarians who allow students to get books that are deemed inappropriate by somebody out there. What are all of these issues that you've decided must be taken up at the last minute?
Well, thank you, Bill, for that question. These issues, well, first of all, to substitute out a bill in the Senate or the House, it occurs every session. It occurs multiple times throughout the session, in fact, and especially on day 39 and 40, when other bills aren't moving for some reason or what have you, you end up adding bills of common interest to one bill.
Sure.
Some people call them Christmas trees. I don't think this bill is a Christmas tree that you're referring to, but all of the issues that you brought up have been properly vetted in the Senate. They went through committee. We had hearings. We had testimony from people on both sides of the arguments. They came through the Senate chamber. They had a vote, and they passed by constitutional majority as required by our Constitution and by law. And then they go over to the House. Some of them get hearings. Some of them get votes. Some of them may not. But it should be no surprise to anyone that this issue is back on the floor today for a final passage in the Senate, because these are bills that we feel really strongly about, because we represent, you know, 200,000 people in each Senate district around our state. There's 56 senators. So we come down here to work on behalf of the voters of our districts, and we put forth issues that are of concern to the hardworking Georgians that we represent. And these are the things that are important to people around Georgia, but regardless of party. Now, you're going to hear people on both sides that may have an issue with parts of bills. But sometimes when you have a bill like this on the floor, it's for the good of the communities and the good of the people that we represent. And I believe this bill deserves to have a final vote. And I think the Senate's going to look at doing that today if we don't run out of time before midnight.
Let me just ask you about one aspect of this. Sex education prohibitions before sixth grade. Democratic Senator Elena Parent pointed out in the debate over this that that means that young girls who have to deal with menstruation have to deal with it somehow in a void that does not include talking about reproduction. And she believed that that seemed rather ludicrous. So she cited that as an example of a measure kind of in search of a problem. What's your thought about that?
I think you'll always find extreme examples that people can throw as why we shouldn't do something down here. But overall, I don't think many parents in any part of Georgia believe that we should be teaching sex education to keep people in kindergarten through fifth grade. We believe the sixth grade and beyond is an appropriate place for that curriculum to be taught in the public schools. Now, if you want to teach that to your child at home, we think that's the more appropriate place. That is more local control to let the parents decide when and how his or her child will be introduced to those topics. We believe what we have come up with is a logical, common sense approach, and we believe this bill should get a vote today in the Senate.
All right. Well, let's talk about a few measures that we also think are waiting for action in the Senate. One of them was the subject of a pretty heated and emotional debate over in the House on day 39. And that was about a bill that would have a 3-year moratorium on new mining permits near the Okefenokee Swamp. And it's something that would, for our listeners, there is a titanium mine proposed. This would essentially delay that mine for 3 more years, and I assume either let more study go forward or let the opponents of that mine continue to do work to say why it shouldn't happen unless there should be a permit issued there. Is that something that you expect to come up? It passed by a gigantic margin in the House.
You know, that's one of those bills that I mentioned earlier, though, where there's about 130 bills that have yet to be taken up by the Senate. We've never heard that particular issue in the Senate. In fact, it hasn't been introduced by another senator this session that I'm aware of. It hasn't been assigned to a committee. It hasn't had a hearing. It hasn't been vetted. We haven't had testimony from the experts. But let me just tell you this, Patricia, I think it's important for people that are listening today to remember that the federal government and the state governments both have regulatory agencies that are set up to study issues like this and to make decisions on when and if a permit gets issued for a number of things: water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, quarries. If you want to have a rock quarry in your community, you have to go through an extensive process of applying for those permits, landfills, you name it, any kind of hazardous waste facilities. Those are things that should not be decided on by political entities like senators and House members. Those are decisions that should be made by the regulatory agencies that have been created by the federal and state governments. And I believe this issue that you're talking about down at the Okefenokee Swamp has been vetted for many, many years. It's been through courts. And I believe the federal and the state agencies have decided that there seems to be no potential harm to the Okefenokee Swamp because of the distance of how far this particular project is located to the swamp. And so I don't know if this bill gets to the floor today or not, but I will tell you this, we have to continue to let our regulatory agencies do their job. Sometimes it slows down progress, and sometimes that's a good thing. But I believe if we start circumventing the regulatory agencies in our state and our federal government, then it could lead to devastation in a lot of the environmental concerns that you share as well as I share.
Senator, you're certainly correct that EPD, the Environmental Protection Division, has already vetted this and said they can move forward. I wasn't aware of federal approval for this, but it does sound to me as if what you're saying is we're not going to vote on this today in the Senate. We want to leave this in the hands of, in this case, the agency, the Environmental Protection Division. Should we expect it will not get a vote on the Senate floor?
I can't. Yes, sir. I can't speak for the Speaker of the House or the Lieutenant Governor. Ultimately, the decision will be made by those two individuals. I think they discussed this issue, and I believe, you know, that's still a possibility. That bill could come to the floor for a vote today. And what I would encourage all of our Republican senators to do is to represent the interests of your communities and listen to the voters back home. And that's who we respond back to. And those are the people that we work for. And again, I want to stress the importance that if we begin the process of circumventing the rulemakers and the regulatory agencies on this issue, then the next issue will be landfills, quarries, water treatment, wastewater treatment. So the list goes on and on and on. There's probably 100 different things they have to issue permits for. And I believe it's important that we take the politics out of that process and make sure that the regulatory agencies feel they have the autonomy to make the decisions on what's good or bad about the environment. And these applications have to be vetted through them and not the legislative process.
All right, Senator, let's move on to another issue that we've been watching for years. That's the question of sports betting here in Georgia. We had Representative Weedower on the show earlier this week who has a bill to wrap that into the Georgia lottery and have a constitutional amendment put forward to voters as a referendum. How does sports betting look this year? We're on day 40. We always wait until like day 40 at 11:59 to see.
These issues pop up quickly. And I heard this morning the House may have passed it out of committee. I haven't seen the details of what they passed, but I understand that they met early this morning, which the House can do. The Senate cannot. Our committee work ended 2-3 days ago. And so we've been sitting, you know, in our caucus meetings trying to discuss what's left to be done today. And all of a sudden the House comes out of committee and they've apparently approved sports betting to be considered to be put on the floor of the House today. And the Senate already took action on it earlier this year. But I think the difference in what we did this year versus others in the past was it becomes a constitutional amendment, which lets the voters of Georgia decide if this is something that they would like to see passed in our state. And it would put into the Constitution the parameters on how this would be managed and regulated. So I think it's important. A lot of people are against gambling in all levels. But I think it's important that when we do things like this at this major level, that the voters have a say in this and not just 56 senators and 180 House members. So, you know, that probably gets on the floor of the House. I don't know if the votes are there. I haven't heard from the whip of the House or majority leader in the House speak about it. So we'll just have to wait and see if that comes over to us this afternoon or tonight.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Something that did not move forward but did get a hearing on the Senate side and 2 Republican votes was a question to expand Medicaid here in Georgia. I was so fascinated that there were 2 Republican votes from Cardin Summers and another extremely conservative senator. Tell us how that came to get a vote. There was a connection to those hospital regulation changes as well that did pass and will really have a major effect on rural hospitals. So tell us a little bit more about how Medicaid did finally get that Senate vote this year.
You know, another good question. I think there's been a lot of discussion about Medicaid expansion back for years, even back before Obamacare was brought into law in Washington, D.C. We thought when Obamacare passed that that was going to take care of all of our health care needs in our country. Obviously, it hasn't. We have a lot of welfare programs. We have Peach Care for kids. We have health care for our foster children. We're going to take care of the needy, the elderly and the disabled. But I'm not sure we have everybody covered. There's 200,000 or 300,000 people we're told that currently aren't covered under insurance in Georgia. And we want everybody to have private insurance. We don't want everybody that doesn't have it to depend on the government to take care of their health care needs. But what we are interested in is looking at alternatives to a standard full-blown Medicaid expansion plan. And that's why Governor Kemp has been very careful in crafting the progress that he's made. He carefully crafted a program that we sent to Washington, D.C. for approval. And we believe it's working. It's off and running, but at a slow start. But I believe it's growing. The interest in that program will continue to develop and expand over the next 2 to 3 years. And I believe we can take care of the needy in this state under that program. We've also had an interest in looking at some other programs like states like Arkansas under Governor Huckabee Sanders. And I believe there's some merit to looking at some of those plans as well. Now, Senator Lucas has been very passionate for years about this. And I believe his passion and his persistence is what led us to have that hearing and that vote last week in the Regulated Industries Committee. We allow Democrats to have their bills heard and vetted as well. The Republicans are sometimes mislabeled as the party of they don't care about what the Democrats' needs are, and that's simply not true. We let the senator from Macon bring that bill forward. He had a hearing on it. It went to a vote, and it failed with a narrow vote. But at this point in time this year, that issue is dead, in my opinion. We want to give Governor Kemp's program an opportunity to fully develop and see where it goes. And if we need to make tweaks in the future, we can certainly take a look at that at the appropriate time.
Senator Gooch, there was certainly some sense among both Republicans, some Republicans, and certainly Democrats at the beginning of the session that there was a pretty good compromise in the works. Passage of a certificate of need, you know, a more liberal policy on certificates of need in exchange for a vote on full expansion of Medicaid. Now, you would argue, I guess, that the vote in the committee fulfills that responsibility. The question is, perhaps Democrats would say it should have come to the floor. But here's the question I really want to ask you. to what extent it appears that there are any number of Republicans, and we hear it said over and over, that if you could just vote privately on this issue, Republicans would pass a full expansion of Medicaid. When that committee met last week, and there were Republicans leaning toward it, to what extent did you hear some rumblings from, say, the governor's office about the fact that that should not get any further? Give us a candid answer.
I don't know of any deal that was made, Bill, between the Republicans and the Democrats on CON.
Okay.
Let me just pivot on CON for a minute. CON was a very delicately crafted piece of legislation. It does not fully repeal CON laws in Georgia, mm-hmm. as you all know, but it does offer some opportunities for some healthcare facilities to expand in Georgia without the long, drawn-out process of the regulatory process that we talked about earlier with the Okefenokee Swamp. There's another example of why we have the regulatory agency set up in Georgia, and they have to monitor these situations like hospitals and healthcare so we don't put some of these smaller communities in jeopardy. We have two hospitals right now in Georgia that are in desperate need of some help. One is in Fannin County, and I believe the other one is in Irwin County. The one in Fannin County is in my district, so I'm concerned about what we can do to help them as well.
Well, then let me ask you about the
Republicans care about health care. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, I don't mean to cut you off.
People need to know Republicans care about health care. We care about the needy. We care about the underprivileged people in this state. But we all know that we have to be able to afford what we put forth. And I think having the governor take a lead on this like he has done for the last few years was the appropriate measure that we need to follow. And let's see where this goes in the next 2 years.
Well, then real quickly, the other part of my question, when that vote was coming up, anybody from the governor's office put a little bug in the ear of Republican members about remembering what Governor Kemp wants to do with Medicaid? Give us an insight on that.
I can't speak on what Governor Kemp does and who he talks to, but I communicate with his staff daily and weekly, and we talk about a lot of issues. We've talked about this issue as well, and I discuss this potential bill with them. And I feel the same way they do, that we need to make an effort of making sure this program gets an opportunity to be successful. And if we need to tweak it going forward, Governor Kemp is more than willing to listen to anybody's ideas.
All right. Well, Senate Majority Leader Steve Gooch, we don't want to take any more of your time. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the latest and greatest on Sine Die. Good luck wrapping up this session. We'll see you down at the Capitol.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed this. Y'all have a good day.
All right. Take care.
All right.
This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Welcome back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm Patricia Murphy, along with Bill Niggott. Well, twice daily delivered straight to your email, you can receive the AJC's Politically Georgia newsletter. Stay on top of all the important news, scoops, and exclusives from me and the rest of the AJC politics team. Just go to AJC.com/newsletters and sign up today. That's AJC.com/newsletters. Well, Senate Minority Leader Gloria Butler is with us now to give us insights about how Democrats are approaching this final day of the legislative session. Senators, as we all know by now, this is the final day, and we have, I believe, Gloria Butler with us. Senator, do we have you with us on the line?
I am on the line.
Okay, terrific. Well, first of all, I don't want to get started without telling our audience this is your last day in session, unless there's some sort of special session that we're not expecting. This is your last day because you have announced your retirement from the state Senate. Congratulations on making it this far. You've only got one day left, although I know you're going to stay very busy through January.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on and speak with you today. And this is my very last day in the session, sine die. And I'm actually really excited about it.
Well, you've been in the Senate, I believe, 26 years. Is this right? As a state lawmaker?
That is correct. I'm in my 26th year right now.
Well, that's terrific. Also, I'm not sure our audience knows, you also worked on Capitol Hill as a staffer. You have a long record in government service, even before these many years in the state Senate. So we're really glad to have you on. We just had Senator Gooch on, and so we'd like to get some feedback from you as what you're expecting today. We know that Democrats have a lot of blocking and tackling to do. That seems to be the posture on these last days, because there are items that are popped into these bills that I think people were not always expecting. There are a lot of surprises. Tell us how you're approaching today.
Well, what we've done is tried to go through as many of the bills as possible so that we won't get to the floor and be so surprised about what's going on the floor today. But we have a team of people that in the background that go through all the bills, and then we get together and discuss them. As a matter of fact, we discussed bills on yesterday and again this morning, those that we weren't able to get to, because we have so many left here at the end of the session, which is a bit unusual. We usually don't have this many bills, seemingly. But we've done a lot of work to be prepared for today.
So, Senator, tell us about a few bills that we are keeping an eye on. We've asked Senator Gooch about them, but let us know whether you're expecting them. Obviously, it's up to the majority. But how about the first one that we're keeping an eye on is a measure on the Okefenokee Swamp, a question of potentially delaying new mining permits near the swamp for 3 years. It passed in the House by a huge margin, but Senator Gooch sounded very skeptical of its chances of coming to the floor.
I can't speak about whether it's going to come to the floor or not, but we did have a discussion on that. And we do know that there are some environmentally groups that are concerned about it. And we've had some conversations with them as well. So we'll just wait to see if it'll come to the floor. And if it does, then we'll be prepared to vote it up or down.
Why do you think that there's some concern in the Senate, given the big vote in the House in favor of this measure? What would hold it up in the Senate, Senator Butler?
I don't think we've had a lot of discussion on the floor about this bill. It's mining, and we do know that there's some fine materials in mining. And it also can destroy the Okefenokee swamps. And so that is a concern of the environmentalists, and we are friends with them. And so we want to do what's best, you know, for the state.
Sure. The other side, though, is as Patricia said, Majority Leader Gooch seemed to suggest he's not eager to see the bill come to the floor, which would suggests that his Republican members may not want it there either. What would their problem be with this bill?
I don't know. And if it doesn't come to the floor, then we'll go to the next bill.
All right. We also had a chance to talk to Mr. Gooch about the vote that came up in the committee for Medicaid reform. That is something that you have been pushing for a very, very long time. We thought it was fascinating that a committee vote came up at all. Can you tell us about how that vote came to happen? But it did not pass, and it felt like there was some intervention either from the governor's office or from Senate leaders that might have stalled that out a little bit. Tell us about your role in getting to that committee vote and why you think it didn't pass out of the committee.
You're absolutely right. I have been in the well. Op-eds, all kinds of media outlets to talk about Medicaid expansion. In my district, I've talked to my constituency about Medicaid expansion. And we did a sort of a people poll And everybody wants Medicaid expansion because we know there are so many people in this state that does not have coverage that need it so badly. Well, we Senator Lucas dropped a bill on Medicaid expansion, and that's kind of started the ball rolling. And then we started having conversations, not only with members, but with the Lieutenant Governor as well. And we brought in the experts to talk to Lieutenant Governor and talk to our staff and go through the bill and make sure that it was just right. And I thought we had a really good bill. We got an agreement to bring it to the committee, vote it out of committee, and at least get it to the floor. But that broke down in committee because there's this process where you can bring in extra members as ex officio to help you help them kill the bill. And the process wasn't, I hate to use the word fair, because there are so many things that are not fair here at the Capitol. We actually won the vote in committee, but the chairman decided to vote in against the bill and make it a tie. Now, that is improper procedure. You don't make a tie. You let that happen. If it's a tie, then you could break it either way. But it was not a tie, and the bill should have come out of committee. And so that's where our agreement broke down, right there.
Senator, it broke down. Well, I'm sorry. You've been there for a long time, as you pointed out. And we know that for at least a number of years, the Republican majority in the Senate has typically been the much more conservative body, much more interested in what we call culture war issues than the House. But given your experience over the years, has that gotten even more intense on the Republican side? Is the Republican majority even more interested in measures that play specifically to the base, that maybe divide the electorate over hot button issues? How has that changed in your time in the Senate, especially in recent years?
I think it's more meaner than it used to be. You know, with the changing of the guard and people in charge of the Senate, it makes a huge difference in their way of thinking. It is supposed to be about the people, not about us. And it's more about the members, it seems, and what they think than what the people think. And we have had so many bills that don't allow, don't want certain things to happen. Such as with our voting bills. I was just thinking the other day, we used to have those voting laws in several little pamphlets. Now we have huge books of voting laws to prohibit people from voting. And that is not what this state is supposed to be about. We should make voting easier, not harder, for people to cast their vote. And people are getting turned off because of that. They think that their vote doesn't count anymore. They're hesitant about going to the polls. Well, we don't want that to happen. And then another issue is about illegals. No one wants an illegal person to participate in the wrong way. None of us do. So we should concentrate on those things that we can do to help people, not hinder. And so that is some of the difference that I've seen over the years. We didn't have as much of that when I first came into the legislature. And even after 10, 15 years, we didn't have those kinds of issues that held us back and made us mad at each other. Although we don't stay mad at each other, we are mad for the moment. And so I think I would hope that we could move away from culture wars and those kinds of bills. And come together more. I think people want us to come together and work things out, not just force upon us. It would be so much better if we had that honest dialogue about the kinds of issues that you're seeing in these last few years with the new regime, with the new guard.
Okay. Well, Senate Minority Leader Gloria Butler, thank you so much for your time today. We will see you down at the Capitol, and we will continue to watch for a number of those issues that you just mentioned. I'm sure we'll see those a little bit later today. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is Politically Georgia from the AJC.
Our journalists at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution are working around the clock to keep you updated on all the developments surrounding the Trump indictment. Now the AJC is putting all of our coverage in one place with our new Trump 19 newsletter. Every Wednesday, you'll have our latest coverage and analysis on this historic case in your inbox. So sign up for free today at ajc.com/indictment newsletter. That's all one word. ajc.com/indictment newsletter.
Welcome back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm Patricia Murphy, along with Bill Nigut. Well, we've got a great offer for Politically Georgia listeners. And listen close, because this is the South's biggest deal. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for $1.99 per week for life. Just subscribe now by going to ajc.com/start. That's ajc.com/start. It's a great deal for a greater Atlanta. And this is for new subscribers only. Well, the action down at the state capitol, in theory, is supposed to stop as the clock strikes midnight. That does not always happen. It can go to 12:01, 12:02, 12:15. We're not exactly sure how much will they abuse the clock tonight, Bill.
Back in over many years that I covered the Capitol, that midnight deadline was absolutely firm. I mean, we all know the famous story of legendary Denmark Groover legislator who went up into the mezzanine and reached down to the clock and stopped the hands so it wouldn't reach midnight. They've lost that. It's now a very elastic time.
It's very elastic. They've decided it's not worth you risking your life over. Right. You'll just act like it's still midnight. That's how they get around the rule now. Well, joining us, of course, from the state capitol is our colleague, Greg Bluestein, who is already down there. Greg, do we have you on the line?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
We've got you. Yes, we've got you. Greg, bring us up to speed. Both chambers gaveled in at 10 o'clock this morning, House and Senate. They're really on these parallel and occasionally competing tracks. So tell us what's going on right now and what's the buzz?
Yeah, we wrote in the morning newsletter this morning that it's a day of hurry up and wait. There's going to be a lot of emotion and drama and spectacle, but this is where we're in the wait moment too. In the Senate and the House, they're just finishing up the Pledge of Allegiance, the prayers. There's a lot of what we call morning orders where people go up and, you know, say whatever they want about the beauty queen they brought in or the prize winning peach or whatever it might be that they're putting on display at the state capitol today. But expect things to get fiery. And as both of you guys mentioned, that midnight deadline used to be sacrosanct. It used to be a tradition. And now, you know, lawmakers can go well past midnight if they want. They've basically decreed that the legislative day ends when they say it ends.
Drunk with power. My goodness. They can literally stop the clock.
They can go for a week.
Hey, Greg, Senator Gooch, Patricia asked him about the Okefenokee bill, which passed overwhelmingly over in the House, whether he was going to bring it up or he thought it would come up in the Senate. And he sounded like he wasn't interested at all.
Very skeptical.
Yeah, he said, well, you know, state agencies ought to have power over the areas that in which they have expertise. I said, does that include EPD, Environmental Protection Division? He said, yes. So it's going to be interesting to see whether anybody finds a way to get that bill into the breast of the Senate today.
Yeah, it sounded like he made the slippery slope argument, which is if the legislature acts on this particular bill, it means that, you know, it could set a new precedent that could be dangerous or could be unsettling to private landowners and others who are aiming to develop projects. Let's be clear, too, this bill would not stop the 538 or so acre mine that Twin Pines plans on the edges of Okefenokee from going forward, but it would stop that project from expanding, and it would also stop others that use the same sort of mining technique from going forward, at least for 3 years. And it's become this very hot button issue in the final days of the legislative session, because there's a huge alliance that supports this of Democrats, Republicans, conservationists, community leaders. I haven't really heard anyone saying that they're against it yet. Although, you know, with Majority Leader Gooch's argument, he's kind of taken a nuance there, which is he's not necessarily for the project, but he worries that the legislature could be overstepping its bounds.
So, Greg, let's talk a little bit about Governor Kemp and his role this legislative session. In many years past, Governor Kemp has come into the House and Senate chambers on day 40, late in the day, and said, this is something that I want. And he will really lay down instructions for lawmakers, and it can even upend lawmakers' plans for how they were going to spend the time. And then they end up starting to work very quickly to get past what the governor asked to get past. Now, he's already had a lot of his priorities passed. Accelerating tax cuts. The school voucher bill was something he asked for on day one instead of day 40 and got that taken care of very quickly. Do we expect the governor in the chambers today or tonight? And then talk a little bit more about what you've learned about his role this session.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see him in the chambers kind of deliver a message about the budget, about maybe one of his priorities that are still outstanding. His motto has kind of been like, speak softly and carry a big stick. He has not weighed in on many issues at all, and that is a contrast with some other governors we've seen, certainly Bill Xcel Miller. There's been others who are much more hands-on in the legislative process, and even Governor Kemp has been more hands-on. You know, think back to 2022 or 2019 when he was very up center stage a lot through this process. This year, there's been a few priorities, and you just talked about one in the last segment. Senate Minority Leader Gloria Butler was talking about Medicaid expansion bill failing. Well, that failed in large part due to Governor Kemp's behind-the-scenes efforts to get that bill killed in the Senate committee because he wants his own more limited expansion that's tied to workforce requirements to move forward, to have more time to grow. But there's not been that many issues. And, you know, Okefenokee is a great example of it, guys. Okefenokee is not something that he is playing a upfront or central role in. And certainly his administration will have what could be the final say on that when the EPD decides whether to go forward with permits. But it's one of many issues where the governor has not weighed in yet.
You know, I remember how terrified legislators could be under, say, the regimes of a Xcel Miller or Roy Barnes about getting a call to come down to the governor's office, because those were governors who, in a very direct one-on-one way, would call lawmakers into the woodshed and say, you better get on board this bill, because if you don't, we're not going to run somebody against you. We're going to defeat the bill you want. Governor Kemp has a different style than that, is partly what you're suggesting.
He does. And I'm not suggesting he doesn't terrify lawmakers in their own way, his own colleagues, because, you know, he put out word he wanted this Medicaid expansion bill killed, and it got killed. Last year, around this time, I think he put fear into the hearts of many lawmakers when he said he'd call them into a special session if they didn't pass an expansion of economic development incentives, and they ended up passing that. So he can still, I think he wields a lot of soft power, though. You know what? Yeah. Rula Rahman, who's been on the show many times, she's a Democrat from Gwinnett County, said even if he's not involved, he's involved in everything, because every time there's a conversation about a certain bill, he's looming over it because, hey, what does Governor Kemp think about it? Even though he hasn't said anything about it, they know that he'll get the final say on these bills.
Yeah, even just a few years ago, it really felt like that true three-legged stool where you had the power really split between Speaker David Ralston and the state Senate, which had its own multiple sources of sort of power centers, and Governor Kemp. And now it really, Greg, feels like Governor Kemp is the most powerful person in that state capitol.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look at the situation, right? He's a second term governor who has high approval ratings in most public polls. And you've got his two counterparts, the lieutenant governor who's new at the job. And it has been a quite somewhat chaotic, maybe that's an understatement, session. He's getting a lot of his priorities through in the Senate, but it's been a lot of mayhem over the Senate. And a lot of different priorities. He's focused a lot on social conservative bills that we talked about earlier in the program. And in the House, which is more it's not moderate, but it's more moderate than the Senate. And you also have Speaker John Burns, who's also, you know, just like Burt Jones, he's new in the role, too. This is also his first session with the Speaker's gavel. And so you've got Governor Kemp, who can play this outsized role. But he really hasn't. He could play this outsized role. He could, you know, physically, you know, get involved in every legislation, summon people to his office, make it very known, issue veto threats. And he really hasn't done that.
You know, the other thing that I think about as you talk about the new leadership in both the House and the Senate, again, is historical. We're seeing a bitterness between, I think, Lieutenant Governor Jones and the House, Speaker Burns and his members, that reminds me very much of the days when Zell Miller was Lieutenant Governor, which we all thought was going to be for life. No one ever expected him to become governor. and Thomas B. Murphy in the House. They were at war virtually every single session. They never liked each other. They fought each other on bills. They would come together when it was absolutely necessary. And it seems like the House and Senate haven't had quite that amount of tension in recent years as all of a sudden it's starting to have again now. Do you think I'm right about that, or have I just been missing it?
No, I think you're right. I mean, you're right in this point too. There's long this House Senate tension. There was the similar tensions between Casey Cagle and Glenn Richardson, Casey Cagle and David Ralston, and even between Jeff Duncan and David Ralston. So it's not unusual to have those tensions, but it hasn't got as personal as it was back in the Tom Murphy days. Give it time, I guess. But also, look, everyone under this gold dome, where it's super loud outside, but I found a little cubbyhole to call in. Everyone in this gold dome suspects that Lieutenant Governor Jones will run for governor in a couple of years. And so, you know, he has his own agenda as well, right, to boost his conservative credentials, to curry favor with certain elements of the Republican Party, and also to win some IOUs out there as well. He'll say it's great policy, too, and that's his opinion. But certainly he's going to use this as sort of the blueprint for a 2026 run. That's the sentiment here in the state capitol. And House Speaker Burns has his own agenda, you know, and his members have their own agenda. And so there's going to be natural flashpoints. And then you get in Governor Kemp, who is not as upfront in general, but also is not as eager to pass some of these social conservative measures that could impact Georgia's business standing as well.
All right, Greg, we've got just a couple seconds left. What are the two or three issues you're really watching for today, for moving on?
Oh, Patricia, me and you got a text from a senior House Republican leader last night saying, expect surprises. We kind of hinted at that in the newsletter this morning. That's what I'm really closely watching. There's going to be a lot of surprises, a lot of expect the unexpected, because anything can happen this final day. And sometimes we don't even know what actually happened for days later, because these guys are passing bills they haven't read yet.
Okay, well, expect the unexpected. Words to live by here on this final day of the legislative session. Greg, we'll see you down at the Capitol.
See you soon.
All right. Well, if you have a question you'd like to ask us here on Politically Georgia, you can call the Politically Georgia call-in hotline anytime. Leave us a message and we'll play it back and answer it right here on the show during our Friday listener mailbag segment. That number is 770-810-5297. Well, that's all the time we have for today's podcast. You can now hear Politically Georgia live weekday mornings at 10 on 90.1 WABE in Atlanta, or follow the show on your favorite podcast app and hear new episodes every afternoon. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review and share it with a friend. Join us again tomorrow for Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
I'm Ernie Suggs, race and culture reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And I'm Ned Ravone, lifestyle columnist. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. I've been living here for 24 years, and I am still amazed at how rich the city's Black culture continues to grow. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
Like historically Black colleges and universities.
Atlanta's thriving arts scene.
And the city's growing neighborhoods.
Wherever you live, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what issues are important to you.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
Only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.